56. White spine uncaged. 23 cohorts followed behind that came from the contributions of the King of Macabacum. For though the bond between man and Spren was at times inexplicable, the ability for bonded Spren to manifest in our world rather than their own grew stronger through the course of the oaths given. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 35, page 9. Amaram obviously doesn't have any surge-binding abilities, Sigzel said softly, standing beside Kaladin. Dalinar, Navani, the King, and Amaram climbed out of their carriage ahead. The dueling arena arose before them, another of the crater-like formations that rimmed the shattered plains. It was much smaller than the ones that held the war camps, however, and had tiered seats inside. With both Elokar and Dalinar in attendance, not to mention Navani and both of Dalinar's sons, Kaladin had brought every guard he could. That included some of the men from Bridge 17 and Bridge 2. Those stood proudly, with spears held high, obviously excited to finally be trusted with their first bodyguard assignment. In total, he had 40 men on duty. None of them would be worth a drop of rain if the assassin in white attacked. "Can we be certain?" Kaladin asked, nodding toward Amaram, who still wore his yellow-gold cloak with the symbol of the Knight's Radiant on the back. "I haven't shown anyone my powers. There have to be others training as I am. Storms still all but promised me there were."
"He'd have displayed the abilities if he had them," Sigzel said. "Gossip is moving through the 10 war camps like floodwater. Half the people think it's blasphemous and stupid, what Dalinar is doing. The other half are undecided. If Amaram displayed surge-binding powers, Brightlord Dalinar's move would look a lot less precarious."
Sigzel was probably right. But Amaram? The man walked with such pride, head held high. Kaladin felt his neck growing hot, and for a moment it seemed the only thing he could see was Amaram. Golden cloak, haughty face, blood-stained. That man was blood-stained. Kaladin told Dalinar about it. Dalinar wouldn't do anything. Someone else would have to.
"Kaladin?" Sigzel asked.
Kaladin realized he'd stepped toward Amaram, hands clenched on his spear. He took a deep breath, then pointed. "Put men up on the rim of the arena there. Scar and Eth are in the preparation room with Adolin, for all the good it will do him out on the field. Put another few down at the arena bottom just in case. 3 men at every door. I'll take 6 with me to the king's seats." Kaladin paused, then added, "Let's also put 2 men guarding Adolin's betrothed, just in case. She'll be sitting with Sabariel."
"We'll do."
"Tell the men to keep focused, Sig. This is likely to be a dramatic fight. I want their minds on the possibility of assassins, not on the duel."
"Is he really going to fight 2 men at once?"
"Yeah."
"Can he possibly win that?"
"I don't know, and I don't really care. Our job is to watch for other threats." Sigzel nodded and moved to leave. He hesitated, however, taking Kaladin by the arm.
"You could join them, Cal," he said softly. "If the king's refounding the Knights Radiant, you have an excuse to show what you are. Dalinar is trying, but so many think of the Radiance as an evil force, forgetting the good they did before they betrayed mankind. But if you showed your powers, it could change minds."
"Join. Under Amaram. Not likely." "Go pass my orders," Kaladin said, gesturing, then pulled his arm free of Sigzel's grip and jogged after the king and his retinue. At least the sun was out today, the spring air warm. Syl bobbed along behind Kaladin.
"Amaram is ruining you, Kaladin," she whispered. "Don't let him."
He gritted his teeth and didn't reply. Instead, he moved up beside Moash, who was in charge of a team who would watch Brightness Navani. She preferred to watch the duels from down below, in the preparation rooms. A part of him wondered if he should let Moash guard anyone other than Dalinar. But storm it, Moash had sworn to him
that he'd take no more actions against the king. Kaladin trusted him on that count. They were Bridge Four.
I'll get you out of this, Moash, Kaladin thought, pulling the man aside. We'll fix this.
Moash, Kaladin said, speaking softly. Starting tomorrow, I'm putting you on patrol duty.
Moash frowned.
I thought you always wanted me guarding... His expression grew hard. This is about what happened. In the tavern.
I want you to take a deep patrol, Kaladin said. Head out toward New Natanin. I don't want you here when we move against Graves and his people.
It had been too long already.
I'm not leaving.
You will, and it's not subject to...
What they're doing is right, Cal.
Kaladin frowned.
Have you still been meeting with them?
Moash looked away.
Only once. To assure them that you'd come around.
You still disobeyed an order, Kaladin said.
Storm it, Moash!
The noise inside the arena was building.
Almost time for the match, Moash said, pulling his arm free of Kaladin's grip. We can talk about this later.
Kaladin ground his teeth, but unfortunately Moash was right. This wasn't the time.
Should have grabbed him this morning, Kaladin thought.
No, what I should have done was make a decision on this days ago.
It was his own fault.
You will go on that patrol, Moash, he said. You don't get to be insubordinate just because you're my friend. Go on.
The man jogged ahead, collecting his squad.
Adolin knelt beside his sword in the preparation room and found he didn't know what to say. He looked at his reflection in the blade. Two shardbearers at once. He'd never even tried that outside of the practice grounds. Fighting multiple opponents was tough. In the histories, if you heard of a man fighting six men at once or whatnot, the truth was probably that he managed to take them one at a time somehow. Two at once was hard, if they were prepared and careful. Not impossible, but really hard.
It comes down to this, Adolin said. He had to say something to the sword. It was tradition.
Let's go be spectacular. Then let's wipe that smile off Sadeus's face.
He stood up, dismissing his blade. He left the small preparation room, walking down the tunnel with carved painted duelists. In the room beyond, Renarin sat in his Kolin uniform. He wore that to official functions like this, instead of the blasted Bridge Four uniform, waiting anxiously. Aunt Navani was screwing the lid off a jar of paint to do a glyph ward.
No need, Adolin said, taking one from his pocket. Painted in Kolin blue, it read, Excellence.
Navani cocked an eyebrow.
The girl?
Yeah, Adolin said.
The calligraphy isn't bad, Navani said, grudgingly.
She's quite wonderful, Aunt, Adolin said. I wish you'd give her more of a chance. And she does want to share her scholarship with you.
We'll see, Navani said.
She sounded more thoughtful than she had before regarding Shallan. A good sign. Adolin placed the glyph ward in the brazier, then bowed his head as it burned. A prayer to the Almighty for aid. His combatants for the day would probably be burning their own prayers. How did the Almighty decide whom to help?
I can't believe, Adolin thought, raising his head from the prayer, that he'd want those who serve Sadeus, even indirectly, to succeed.
I'm worried, Navani said.
Father thinks the plan could work and Elokar really likes it.
Elokar can be impulsive, Navani said, folding her arms and watching the remnants of the glyph ward burn. The terms change things.
The terms, agreed upon with Relis and spoken in front of the High Judge just earlier, indicated that this jewel would go until surrender, not until a certain number of plate sections were broken. That meant if Adolin did manage to beat one of his foes, making the man give in, the other could keep fighting. It also meant that Adolin didn't have to stop fighting until he was convinced he was bested, or until he was incapacitated. Renarin walked over, resting a hand on Adolin's shoulder.
I think the plan is a good one, he said. You can do this.
They're going to try to break you, Navani said. That's why they insisted this be a match until the surrender. They'll leave you crippled if they can, Adolin.
No different from the battlefield, he said. Actually, in this case, they will want to leave me alive. I'll work better as an object lesson with blade-dead legs than I would as ashes.
Navani closed her eyes, drawing in a breath. She looked pale. It was a little like having his mother back.
A little.
Make sure you don't give Satius any outs, Renarin said to him as the armorers entered with Adolin's shard plate. When you corner him with a challenge, he will look for a way to escape. Don't let him. Bring him down on those sands and beat him bloody, brother.
With pleasure.
Now, you ate chicken? Renarin asked.
Two plates of the stuff, with curry.
Mother's chain?
Adolin felt in his pocket. Then he felt in his other one.
What?
Renarin asked, fingers tightening on Adolin's shoulder.
I could have sworn I slipped it in.
Renarin cursed.
Might be back in my rooms, Adolin said. In the war camps. On my end table.
Assuming he hadn't grabbed it, then lost it on the way.
Storms.
It was just a good luck charm. It didn't mean anything. He started sweating anyway as Renarin scrambled to send a runner off to search. They wouldn't get back in time. Already he could hear the crowd outside, the growing roar that came before a duel. Adolin reluctantly allowed his armorers to begin putting on his plate. By the time they gave him his helm, he had recovered most of his rhythm. The anticipation that was an odd blend of anxiety in his stomach and relaxation in his muscles. You couldn't fight while tense. You could fight while nervous, but not while tense. He nodded to the servants, and they pushed open the doors, letting him stride out onto the sand. He could tell from their cheering where the dark eyes sat. In contrast, the light eyes grew softer instead of louder when he emerged. It was good that Elokar reserved space for the dark eyes. Adolin liked the noise. It reminded him of a battlefield.
There was a time, he thought, when I didn't like the battlefield because it wasn't quiet like a duel.
Despite his original reluctance, he had become a soldier.
He strode out into the center of the arena. The others hadn't left their preparation room yet.
Take Relis first, Adolin told himself. You know his dueling style.
The man preferred vine stance, slow and steady, but with sudden, quick lunges. Adolin wasn't sure whom he'd bring along to fight with him, though he'd borrowed a full set of the king's blade and plate. Perhaps his cousin wanted to try again, for vengeance? Shallan was there, on the opposite side of the arena, her red hair standing out like blood on stone. She had two bridgeman guards. Adolin found himself nodding in appreciation of that, and raised a fist to her. She waved back. Adolin danced from one foot to the other, letting the power of the plate flow through him. He could win, even without Mother's Chain. The problem was he intended to challenge Satius after this, so he had to retain enough strength for that duel. He checked, anxious. Was Satius there? Yes. He sat only a little ways from Father and the King. Adolin narrowed his eyes, remembering the crushing moment of realization when he'd seen Satius's armies retreating from the tower. That steadied him. He'd stewed long about that betrayal. It was time, finally, to do something. The doors across from him opened. Four men in shard plate strode out.
Four! Dalinar said, leaping to his feet.
Kaladin took a step downward toward the arena floor. Yes, those were all shard-bearers entering the sands of the dueling arena below. One wore a set of the king's plate, the other three wore their own, ornamented and painted. Down below, the high judge for the bout turned and cocked her head toward the king.
What is this?
Dalinar bellowed toward Satius, who sat only a short distance away. The light eyes on the bench-like rows of seats between them hunched down or fled, leaving a direct line of sight between the high princes. Satius and his wife turned about, lazily.
Why do you ask me? Satius called back.
None of those men are mine. I'm just an observer today.
Oh, don't be tiresome, Sadius, Elikar called. You know full well what is happening. Why are there four? Is Adolin supposed to pick the two he wants to duel?
Two? Sadius asked. When was it said that he would fight two?
That's what he said when he set up the duel, Dalinar shouted. Paired disadvantaged duel, two against one, as per the dueling conventions.
Actually, Sadius replied, that is not what young Adolin agreed to. Why, I have it on very good authority that he told Prince Relis, I'll fight you and whomever you bring. I don't hear a specification of a number in there, which subjects Adolin to a full disadvantaged duel, not a paired duel. Relis may bring as many as he wishes. I know several scribes who recorded Adolin's precise words, and I hear the High Judge asked him specifically if he understood what he was doing, and he said that he did.
Dalinar growled softly. It was a sound Kaladin had never heard from him, the growl of a beast on a chain. It surprised him. The High Prince contained himself, however, sitting down with a curt motion.
"Here, Thotis," Dalinar said softly to the king. "Again. We'll need to retreat and consider our next move. Someone tell Adolin to pull out of the contest."
"Are you certain?" the king said. "Pulling out would require that Adolin forfeit, uncle. That's 6 shards, I believe. Everything you own."
Kaladin could read the conflict in Dalinar's features. The scrunched-up brow, the red fury rising on his cheeks, the indecision in his eyes. Give up? Without a fight? It was probably the right thing to do. Kaladin doubted he could have done it. Below, after an extended pause, frozen on the sand, Adolin raised his hand in a sign of agreement. The judge began the duel.
"I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot. I'm a storm-cursed idiot!"
Adolin jogged backward across the sand-covered circle of the arena. He'd need to put his back to the wall to avoid being completely surrounded. That meant he'd start the duel with no place to retreat, locked in a box, cornered. Why hadn't he been more specific? He could see the holes in his challenge. He'd agreed to a full disadvantaged duel without realizing it. He should have stated specifically that Relis could bring one other. But no. Doing so would have been smart, and Adolin was a storming idiot. He recognized Relis from his plate and blade, colored completely a deep black, breakaway cloak bearing his father's glyph bear. The man in king's plate, judging by his height and the way he walked, would indeed be Elit, Relis's cousin, returned for a rematch. He carried an enormous hammer rather than a blade. The two moved across the field carefully, and their two companions took the flanks, one in orange, the other in green. Adolin recognized the plate. That would be Abrobadar, a full shard-bearer from Aladar's camp, and Yakimov, bearing the king's blade that Relis had borrowed. Yakimov, Adolin's friend. Adolin cursed. Those two were among the best duelists in the camp. Yakimov would have won his own blade years ago if he'd been allowed to risk his plate. That had apparently changed. Had he and his house been bought with a promise of a share in the spoils? Blade forming in his hand, Adolin backed into the cool shade of the wall around the arena grounds. Just above him, dark eyes roared on their benches. Whether they were thrilled or horrified by what he faced, Adolin could not tell. He'd come here intending to give a spectacular show. They'd get the opposite instead. A quick slaughter. Well, he'd made this pyre himself. If he was going to burn on it, he'd at least put up a fight first. Relis and Aelit prowled closer, one in slate gray, the other in black, as their allies worked around the sides. Those would hang back to try to make Adolin focus on the two in front of him. Then the others could attack him from the sides.
"One at a time, lad,"
One shout from the stands seemed to separate from the others. Was that Zyle's voice?
You're not cornered.
Relis stepped forward in a quick motion, testing Adolin. Adolin danced away in wind stance, certainly the best against so many foes, with both hands holding the blade in front of him, positioned sideways with one foot forward.
You're not cornered. What did Zyle mean? Of course he was cornered. It was the only way to face four. And how could he possibly face them one at a time? They'd never allow that.
Relis tested forward again, making Adolin shuffle sideways along the wall, focused on him. He had to turn somewhat to face Relis, however, and that put Abrobadar, moving up the other way, wearing orange, in his blind spot. Storms.
They're scared of you,
Zyle's voice drifting again above the crowd.
Do you see it in them? Show them why.
Adolin hesitated. Relis stepped forward, making a stone stance strike. Stone stance to be immobile. Elit came in next, hammer held wardingly. They backed Adolin along the wall toward Abrobadar. No. Adolin had demanded this duel. He had wanted it. He would not become a frightened rat.
Show them why.
Adolin attacked. He leaped forward, sweeping with a barrage of strikes at Relis. Elit jumped away with a curse as he did so. They were like men with spears prodding at a white spine. And this white spine was not yet caged. Adolin shouted, beating against Relis, scoring strikes on his helm and left vambrace, cracking the latter. Stormlight rose from Relis's forearm. As Elit recovered, Adolin spun on him and struck, leaving Relis dazed from the attack. His assault forced Elit to hold his hammer back and block with his forearm, lest Adolin slice the hammer in two and leave him unarmed. This was what Zyle meant. Attack with fury. Don't allow them time to respond or assess. Four men. If you could intimidate them into hesitating, maybe... Adolin stopped thinking. He let the flow of the fight consume him, let the rhythm of his heart guide the beating of his sword. Elit cursed and pulled away, leaking stormlight from his left shoulder and forearm. Adolin turned and smashed his shoulder into Relis, who was stepping back into his stance. His shove threw the black-plated man tumbling to the ground. Then, with a shout, Adolin turned and met Abrobadar head-on as the man came dashing up to help. Adolin fell into stone stance himself, smashing his blade down again and again against Abrobadar's raised sword, until he heard grunts, curses, until he could feel the fear coming off the man in orange like a stench, and could see fear spread on the ground. Elit approached, wary, as Relis scrambled up to his feet. Adolin fell back into wind stance and swept about himself in a wide, fluid motion. Elit jumped away and Abrobadar stumbled back, gauntleted hand against the wall of the arena. Adolin turned back toward Relis, who had recovered well, all things considered. Still, Adolin got in a second strike at the champion's breastplate. If this had been a battlefield, and these common foes, Relis would be dead, Elit maimed. Adolin was yet untouched. But they weren't common foes. They were shard-bearers, and a second strike against Relis's breastplate didn't break the armor. Adolin was forced to turn on Abrobadar before he wanted to, and the man was now braced for the fury of the assault, sword raised defensively. Adolin's barrage didn't stun him this time. The man weathered it while Elit and Relis got into position. Just need to... Something crashed into Adolin from behind. Yakimov. Adolin had taken too long and had allowed the fourth man, his supposed friend, to get into position. Adolin spun about, moving into a puff of stormlight rising from his backplate. He raised his sword into Yakimov's next attack, but that opened his left flank. Elit swung, hammer crashing into Adolin's side. Plate cracked, and the blow shoved Adolin off balance. He swept around himself, growing desperate. This time his foes didn't back away. Instead, Yakimov charged in, head down, not even swinging. Smart man. His green armor was unscored. Even though the move let Adolin slam his sword down and hit the man on the back, it threw Adolin completely out of his stance. Adolin stumbled backward, barely keeping from being thrown to the ground as Yakimov crashed into him. Adolin shoved the man aside, somehow keeping hold of his shard blade, but the other three moved in. Blows rained on his shoulders, helm, breastplate. Storms, that hammer hit hard. Adolin's head rang from a blow. He'd almost done it. He let himself grin as they beat on him. Four at once. And he'd almost done it. "I yield," he said, voice muffled by his helm. They continued attacking. He said it louder. Nobody listened. He raised his hand to signal to the judge to stop the proceedings, but someone slammed his arm downward. "No," Adolin thought, swinging about himself in a panic. The judge could not end the fight. If he left this duel alive, he would do so as a cripple. "That's it," Dalinar said, watching the four shardbearers take turns coming in to swing at Adolin, who was obviously disoriented, barely able to fight them off. "The rules allow Adolin to have help, so long as his side is disadvantaged, one less than Relis's team. Elokar, I'll need your shard blade." "No," Elokar said. The king sat with folded arms beneath the shade. Those around him watched the duel, no, the beating, in silence.
"Elokar," Dalinar said, turning. "That is my son."
"You're without plate," Elokar said. "If you take the time to put some on, you'll be too late. If you go down, you won't save Adolin. You'll simply lose my blade as well as all the others."
Dalinar clenched his teeth. There was a drop of wisdom in that, and he knew it. Adolin was finished. They needed to end the match now and not put more on the line.
"You could help him, you know," Sadius's voice.
Dalinar spun toward the man.
"The dueling conventions don't forbid it," Sadius said, speaking loudly enough for Dalinar to hear. "I checked to make sure. Young Adolin can be helped by up to two people. The Blackthorn I once knew would have been down there already, fighting with a rock if he had to. I guess you're not that man anymore."
Dalinar sucked in a breath, then stood.
"Elokar, I'll pay the fee and borrow your blade by right of the tradition of the King's Blade. You won't risk it that way. I'm going to fight."
Elokar caught him by the arm, standing.
"Don't be a fool, Uncle. Listen to him. Do you see what he's doing? He obviously wants you to go down and fight."
Dalinar turned to meet the king's eyes, pale green, like his father's.
"Uncle," Elokar said, grip tightening on his arm, "listen to me for once. Be a little paranoid. Why would Sadius want you down there? It's so an accident can occur. He wants you removed, Dalinar. I guarantee that if you step onto those sands, all four will attack you straight out. Shardblade or none, you'll be dead before you get into stance."
Dalinar puffed in and out. Elokar was right. Storm him, but he was right. Dalinar had to do something, though. A murmur rose from the watching crowd, whispers like scratches on paper. Dalinar spun to see that someone else had joined the battle, stepping from the preparation room, shard blade held nervously in two hands but wearing no plate. Renarin. Oh no. One of the attackers moved away, plated feet crunching on sand. Adolin threw himself in that direction, battering his way out from among the three others. He spun and backed away. His plate was starting to feel heavy. How much stormlight had he lost?
No broken sections, he thought, keeping his sword toward the three other men who fanned out to advance on him. He could maybe... No. Time to end this.
He felt a fool, but better a live fool than a dead one. He turned toward the High Judge to signal his surrender. Surely she could see him now.
"Adolin," Relis said, prowling forward, his plate leaking from small cracks on his chest. "Now, we wouldn't want to end this prematurely, would we?"
"What glory do you think will come of such a fight?"
Adolin spat back, sword held carefully, ready to give the signal. "You think people will cheer you for beating a man four against one?"
"This isn't for honor," Relis said. "It's simple punishment."
Adolin snorted. Only then did he notice something on the other side of the arena. Renarin, in Colin blue, holding a wobbly shard blade and facing down Abrobatar, who stood with sword on his shoulder as if completely unthreatened.
"Renarin!" Adolin shouted. "What in the storms are you doing? Go back!"
Abrobatar attacked, and Renarin parried awkwardly. Renarin had done all of his sparring in shard plates so far, but hadn't had the time to fetch his plate. Abrobatar's blow just about knocked the weapon from Renarin's hands.
"Now," Relis said, stepping closer to Adolin, "Abrobatar there is fond of young Renarin and doesn't want to hurt him. So he'll just keep the young man engaged, make a good fight of it. So long as you're willing to keep up what you promised and have a good duel with us. Surrender like a coward, or get the king to end the bout, and Abrobatar's sword might just slip."
Adolin felt a panic rising. He looked toward the High Judge. She could call this on her own if she felt it had gone too far. She sat imperiously in her seat, watching him. Adolin thought he saw something behind her calm expression.
"They got to her," he thought. "With a bribe, perhaps."
Adolin tightened his grip on his blade and looked back toward his three foes.
"You bastards," he whispered.
"Yakimov, how dare you be a part of this?"
Yakimov didn't reply, and Adolin could not see his face behind his green helm.
"So," Relis said, "shall we?"
Adolin's response was a charge. Dalinar reached the judge's seat, which sat on its own small stone dais, hanging out a few inches over the dueling grounds. Brightness Isto was a tall, graying woman who sat with hands in her lap, watching the duel. She did not turn as Dalinar stepped up beside her.
"It is time to end this, Isto," Dalinar said. "Call the fight. Award the victory to Relis and his team."
The woman kept her eyes forward, watching the duel.
"Did you hear me?"
Dalinar demanded. She said nothing.
"Fine," he said. "I'll end it then."
"I am High Prince here, Dalinar," the woman said. "In this arena, my word is the only law, granted me by the authority of the king."
She turned to him.
"Your son has not surrendered, and he is not incapacitated. The terms of the duel have not been met, and I will not end it until they have been. Have you no respect for the law?"
Dalinar ground his teeth together, then looked back at the arena. Renarin fought one of the men. The lad had barely any training in the sword. In fact, as Dalinar watched, Renarin's shoulder began to twitch, pulling up toward his head violently. One of his fits. Adolin fought the other three, having cast himself among them again. He fought marvelously, but could not fend off all of them. The three surrounded him and struck. The pauldron on Adolin's left shoulder exploded in a burst of molten metal, bits trailing smoke through the air, the main chunk of it skidding to the sands a short distance away. That left Adolin's flesh exposed to the air and to the blades facing him.
"Please, almighty."
Dalinar turned upon the stands full of spectating light eyes.
"You can watch this," he shouted at them. "My sons fight alone. There are shard-bearers among you. Is there not one of you who will fight with them?"
He scanned the crowd. The king was looking at his feet. Amaram. What of Amaram? Dalinar found him seated near the king. Dalinar met the man's eyes. Amaram looked away.
"No."
"What has happened to us?" Dalinar asked. "Where is our honor?"
"Honor is dead," a voice whispered from beside him.
Dalinar turned and looked at Captain Kaladin. He hadn't noticed the bridgeman walking down the steps behind him. Kaladin took a deep breath, then looked at Dalinar.
"But I'll see what I can do. If this goes poorly, take care of my men."
Spear in hand, he grabbed the edge of the wall and flung himself over, dropping to the sands of the arena floor below.